We'll say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Tzadik Zayin, and we are going to pick up on the top of Tzadik Zayin, Amud Aleph, end of the first line. A very exciting and interesting daf this morning. First of all, I apologize for the change in location. As you might have figured out already the last couple of days, the air conditioning in the base medrash is not working. This is not like a fundraising speech. You know, this is you'll get that later when we actually build the building in Eretz Hashem. But it could be taken that way. If you want to interpret it that way, fine. So let's begin. I'll say, Ketzad Mocheres. Now, the Gemara deals with a very interesting question. We've established already that a woman is able to go ahead and sell off the property of her husband's estate, her deceased husband's estate, in order to provide for her mazonos, right? In order to be able to provide for her sustenance. So now the Gemara asks, how exactly does this process of selling off property occur? Now, obviously, you can't sell off. So you'd say, well, it's very simple. Let her decide how much money she needs, let's say, for the week, and let her sell off a piece of land. Obviously, in real estate transactions, if you're selling off very small parcels, they're not going to be worth much to the purchaser, and you're going to have to sell it at a very deep discount. So Chazal already taking into account, you have to be able to sell off a significant tract of land in order to be able to get proper market value. So Rav Daniel Rav Katina says, you go ahead and you sell off the equivalent of property, enough to sustain her for an entire year. But I will say, here's the problem. The problem is, you don't want to give her all of that money in a lump sum. Why? Because, for example, let's say, should she choose to get remarried, if she gets remarried, she's no longer entitled to mazonos from the estate. Or for that matter, remember, once she collects her ksuva, she's no longer entitled to get the mazonos from the estate. So on one hand, I have to sell off a large amount of property because I want to get a good price. On the other hand, I don't want her getting all of that money. So what do? So we sell off enough property to provide for 1 year's worth of support, but the way the transaction is structured is that the purchaser pays every 30 days, pays installment payments. Now, what's the chab of installment payments? So pays off the cost of the land over a year, so it's 12 equal payments for the purchase price of the land, payable over the course of a year. This way, should her status change sometime over the course of the year, the purchaser could redirect the payments to the orphans and to the estate and no longer to the wife. Rabbi Yehuda says, Mocheres l'shisha chadash. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, she doesn't sell off a year's worth of property. When I say a year's worth of property, you understand a year's worth of financials, a year's worth of property that could, a block of property that could provide for a year's worth of support. Instead, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, she only sells off a block of property that could provide for 6 months of support. Say, Rabbi Yehuda, he disagrees with the amount of property sold off, but he agrees with the payment structure. And ultimately, the purchaser will pay again in 6 equal installments of 6 monthly payments. Those payments begin as being given to the woman, but should her status change, those payments are redirected towards the estate. Tanya Kavasi de Rav Huna, we have a braisa that supports Rav Huna. So we'll say the Brisa says quite explicitly, she sells off a block of land, a block of property that could provide her with sustenance for an entire year, and the purchase price for that block of real estate is divided up into 12 equal payments over the course of the year, and that's how she gets her mazonos. We have a Brisa that supports Rav Yehuda as well. But also another Brisa, and the Brisa says over here that's what she sells off a block of property enough to provide for her sustenance for 6 months. But again, same idea. She goes ahead and she receives 6 equal monthly payments. And again, should there be any change in her status, those payments are redirected back to the estate. So we'll say there's a brisa that supports each of these opinions. Amra Meimar, Sa Meimar said, Hilchasa Mocheres L'shisha Chadashim. So what Sameimar said, thank you, that the halacha lemaisa is that she only sells off 6 months worth of support in real estate. So not an entire year, but rather a 6 month block. And those payments are payable once a month to the woman. And again, should her status change, the payments are redirected towards the estate. So the Gemara goes back there. The Gemara says, okay, fine. Amrali Ravashi da Meimar. So Ravashi said, Tameimar, Dravhuna Mai. So mostly here's what's interesting. So Ameimar said that the halacha follows Rabbi Huda. And Rabbi Huda again says that she assesses how much, let's say, for argument's sake, let's say her support is $1,000 a month. So therefore, Ameimar said the halacha follows Rabbi Huda, namely, that she'll identify $6,000 worth of real estate. She'll sell that off, and that $6,000 is payable again $1,000 a month over 6 months. So asks Rav Ashi Ta'amimar, so why do you automatically pass in like Rav Yehuda? Like Rav Huna? What about Rav Yehuda? So the Gemara says, Rav Ashi Ta'amimar, Rav Huna Mai. I'm sorry, just the opposite. Why do you pass like Rav Yehuda? Sorry, you pass like Rav Yehuda. What about the Shita of Rav Huna, who said that you sell off the block of property equivalent to a year's worth of support? So Amar Lei Lo Shmieli, to which Ameimar responded, well, I never heard the position of Rav Huna, but that really means Kilomar Lo Svirali. I don't hold that by that position. So Rav says, it's very interesting. So Rav Ashi says to Ameimar, why do you paskin like Rav Huna? Right? Excuse me, why do you paskin like Rav Huna and not like Rav Yehuda? To which he answered, because that's how I paskin. All right, so the Gemara goes like this. Boy, Minir Rav Sheshes. So they asked the Kasha of Rav Sheshes. Mocheres lemezonos, ma'u shetach, sarva titrof leksuva. Now, I will say, this is a very interesting question. So they asked the following Kasha. So let's say now, we've already established that she's entitled to go ahead and sell off her husband's property in order to provide for her mezonos. And we've established that, again, she's permitted to sell the value of property up to 6 months' worth of support. Here's the interesting shaila. Let's say she burns through that entire estate to provide for her mezonos. Now, of course, she's also entitled to what? To her ksuva. So can she go back and seize those very same properties that she sold off for mezonos and now re-seize them for the purpose of satisfying the debt for her ksuva? So the Gemara says, again, Mocheres looks mezonos, if a woman sold off property for mezonos, ma'u shetachzor v'tishrof l'ksuva. Can she go ahead and re-seize those properties? I've also said this question obviously only comes up if there are no longer any more properties in the estate. So assuming there are no more properties in the estate, she wants to now collect her ksuva. Can she go back and re-seize those very properties that she sold for mezonos? So the Gemara says, Kami barilei. So this is really Akasha in the Shita of Rav Yosef. What does Rav Yosef say? Tam Rav Yosef, Armalta de Zabin Achrayos Diasmi. The Rabbo say what this says is if a woman sells off property. Now if you look at Rashi, he says Armalta de Zabin. Armalta is a widow. A widow goes ahead and sells off property. Sade Yisomim Lemazormos Oluksuva VeKibla LeAchrayos. Let's say a woman sells off property. Either again, to satisfy her mezonos obligation or to satisfy her ksuva obligation. The halacha is achrayus ayasmi, Rashi says. Achrayus alukuchos chozal yusomim shari alein hayachot. So this is pretty straightforward. So the mice, again, if a woman sells off property for her mezonos, or for that matter, she sells off property to satisfy her ksuva debt, and let's say she sells the property with achrayus, remember we've established this, with responsibility, that should the property be seized for any reason, there's responsibility upon the seller to go ahead and make the purchaser whole. That responsibility, that achrayus, is not on the woman. Rather, who is it on? It's on the orphans, or in other words, it's on the estate, which makes sense because, remember, the obligation for mezonos, the obligation for ksuva, is a chov, is a financial obligation on the estate. Therefore, again, the achrayus rests on their shoulders. Ubeidina de zabin, and similarly, again, if Beisdin went ahead and sold off property. Achrayus ayasmi. I will say this would be a case of Beisdin selling off property again, also to take care of the woman's mezonos or to take care of her ksuva. Same idea, achrayus ayasmi. The achrayus rests on the shoulders of the orphans, which essentially means the shoulders of the estate. So the Gemara says, Mais, what do we say in this case? The Gemara says, now that we've established that when a woman sells off property, let's say to satisfy her ksuva or to satisfy her mezonos, the achrayus for that sale is not on the woman. The achrayus for that sale is on who? Is on the estate, is on the son. I will say again, the logic behind that is because when a woman sells off property, let's say for her mezonos or for her ksuva, in a halachic sense, she's acting as an agent of the estate because it's the estate's obligation to provide her with mezonos, it's the estate's obligation to provide her with a ksuva, therefore she's acting on their behalf. Therefore, the achrayus that she promises to the buyer ultimately, again, it's on the shoulders of the estate. So now let's go back to our case. Our question is, she sold off all the property for mezonos. Now she wants to collect for her ksuva. So what's the halacha? Can she go back and seize those very same properties that she sold for mizonos? Can she now go back and re-seize them for ksuva? So what's the halacha? Okay, von dach raya sayasmi. So I want to, like, say, look, since the responsibility is on the yisomim tarfa, so she can seize it. And I was also saying, since at the end of the day, there is achrayas, but the achrayas rests on the shoulders of the yisomim, so perhaps the wife should be permitted to go back, seize those very same properties that she sold from mizonos, take them back now for ksuva, and I, the purchaser, is going to have a claim to achrayas. Wonderful. Let the purchasers go back to the yisomim. Let the purchasers go back to the estate, and the yisomim will be obligated to make the purchaser whole. On the other hand, oh, Dilma, Matzi Amrila, perhaps on the other hand, the yisomim could say to the wife, Ni da achrayas da ama lo kabilis iluch. It's true that wife, widow, you have no achrayas for when you sell the property. That is true. That ultimately, again, if the property for some reason is seized by some external party, you have no obligation. However, achrayas de nafsheich, mi lo kabuli kabilos, but achrayas for your own actions, do you not have responsibility? In other words, Rabbi say that the Yisomim can say, look, it's true. You don't have achrayas, meaning if some other creditor comes and seizes that land that you sold to the purchaser for your mizonos, it's true, you have no obligation vis-a-vis the purchaser. But if you are the one who sold it, and now you are the one who seizes it, you absolutely have achrayas for that. So the Gemara says, Amarle. So Rabbi say, so now that's the shaylos. Remember, the Gemara is just posing the two sides of the question. So Amarle, Tinisua, we learned this. A woman is permitted to sell off property of the estate to satisfy her mizonos obligation ad kidei kisuvasa, until the amount of her ksuva. The samachla shetigba ksuvasa min ashar, and there should leave aside a certain amount of property that she could be somechas on, that she could rely on, that she's going to be able to collect from her ksuva. Shmamina, what do we see from this? Shaira in lo shaira lo. So we'll say the Bryce is quite explicit. When does she get to collect the ksuva from the estate? When there's leftover property. Which the mashmaos of that is, that had she sold off all of the property, in order to what? In order to take care of her mizonos, then what? Then lemaise again, she's done. Right? Nothing more to talk about. Meaning, she's lost that ability to collect any further mizonos. So again, so the estate could say, oh, is it the estate's obligation to go ahead? Oh, so yes. Technically, the answer to that is yes, although we're going to see that, remember, she has an incredible right to sell off property without consulting with anyone first. So technically speaking, you could have a case where she sold off property without anyone even knowing. So now it's too late. Everything is sold off, and now the estate has nothing. So it sounds like from the price of she sold off all of the property from the estate for her mizonos, she's stuck. She can't go back and now seize the property. Marcus says, one second, if a dilma, eita tova kamashmalan, dila likru la hadrinisa. Maybe the Braisa is not telling you a halacha, but rather the Braisa is telling you Eitz HaTova. I was about to say, what's the Eitz HaTova? The Eitz HaTova for the woman is, don't sell off all of the property, and then have to go back and seize those same properties in satisfaction of your ksuva. Why? Because they're going to call you a hadronisa. What's a hadronisa? An Indian giver, right? So what happens? I'm about to say, by the way, this is worse than an Indian giver. Because Indian giver, mamish, you know, we all have traumatic childhood memories of Indian giving. So remember, again, but at least the Indian giver, you know, easy come, easy go. Somebody gave you something, they take it back. Here it's much more profound. Because remember, again, these people bought something. And now she's going back and re-seizing it. So maybe the price is saying is like this. Technically, her legal right is she could seize property. Isay, meaning technically, even if she sold property from mizonos, now if there's no more property in the estate and she wants her ksuva, she can go back and seize that property in satisfaction of her ksuva debt. What the Braisa is telling her is, it's a bad idea. It's a very bad idea because you're going to get a bad reputation as a hadronisa, and no one wants to be called a hadronisa. Anymore, says, I'm sorry? It's just bad. It just ruins your reputation. It'll impact her ability maybe to transact future transactions. It erodes her name. I mean, if you think about it, just like Mara's saying, it doesn't look nice. You're the kind of person that sells property knowing full well. Now, you see, the chap over here is, she knows. So it's almost like there's a certain dishonesty over here. You knew that you were selling out from the Zaros. You also know there's no property in the estate, which means that you knew, or maybe we think you knew, that when you sold the property, you knew you were going to have to re-seize it back. Doesn't look nice. Imkein, if that's the case, listni gova ksuvasa min ashar. If that's the case, then the Braisa should just say, let her set aside property let her set aside property so that she can collect her ksuva from the remainder of the estate. My samachla, but that's not what the Braisa says. The Braisa says that they should set aside property so that she can be somich on that property. We'll say that lashon of smicho, so she could be somich, really indicates to us that lamaisa, what we're saying is this is where she collects the property and from nowhere else. Shma mino, shaira in, lo shaira lo. We'll say, and indeed the Gemara says, you're right, and we'll say that is the halacha. The halacha is that if a woman sells off all of her property in the estate, she may not go back and re-seize that same property from the estate, from the purchasers, in order to satisfy her ksuva debt. Therefore, again, what the Braisa is saying is that lamaisa, it is incumbent upon the estate, and really, it's almost, to a certain degree, sometimes the woman who has to take the proactive stance on this, to set aside certain properties. Now, it may come at a disadvantage to her. And the disadvantage to her would be what? That if there are limited assets in the estate, she will have to at some point choose between what? Choose between mizonos and choose between ksuva. Seina chinami, that can't, because remember, again, one way or another, you know, it's important to note, the estate has limited liability, which means is that, or I should say differently, the yesomim never have personal liability. So for example, again, if a woman burns through the assets of the estate for her mizonos, let's say she has kinai nahara, you know, a good appetite, so she's burning through the estate for her mizonos, so she can't go back and say to the yesomim, we're out of property, pay my ksuva. The yesomim say, no, our liability is capped at the value of the assets of the estate. So if you went ahead and you burned through that estate, you're done. Therefore, the Braisa says, Eino chinami, that is the halacha. Therefore, again, it's important from an estate planning perspective to set aside certain properties as the properties that will satisfy the ksuva debt, and she should know that that is up to the amount that she can spend for her mizonos anymore, meaning if she now again, it's her option. She could choose to sell off those properties to satisfy her mizonos, but just know that they come at the expense of her ksuva. Iboilu, zobin velo tzricha lezuze. Both said, now this is a fascinating case. And this, the truth is, the Gemara is only bringing this up now. Now it is not really that it has to do with, it doesn't have anything to do with ksuva, but it's just great because it has to do with the sale. And this, you should know, this kind of case comes up very often. Iboilu, question is the following. Zobin velo tzricha lezuze. Both listen to this case. So look at Rashi. Zobin velo tzricha lezuze. Machar sadeva anem yodin sheyachavez likno sade ploni, o pragmatia plonis, but also in maus. Velo tzricha lezuze, shechazu anemachal. Let's listen to this. So I'm selling my field to Reuven. I'm selling my field. Now I will say, why am I selling my field? Why am I selling property? So I'm selling property because I need money. Why do I need money? Because everyone knows I want to buy. You know, I Reuven is selling his his car, and he's got an antique Honda, right? So, you know, mamish, you know, I've had my eye on the antique Honda for a long time. So now I want to buy the car. So it's meaning it's no. That's the reason why I'm selling my field. So what happens? So I sell the field to Reuven, and now it turns out Reuven says, you know what? I've grown so attached to this Honda, I don't want to part with it, so I'm not selling it. Mm-hmm. So now the shaila is like this: do I have the ability to go back to the purchaser of the land and say I'd like to renege on the sale? Because why? What's my logic? You knew that the only reason I was selling the field was why? To get money to buy the antique Honda. Now, again, so the antique Honda is no longer on the market, and therefore, again, the whole sale is void. So what's the halacha? Can I void that sale or not? I will say, we'll see. The Gemara goes weiter. So the Gemara, Hadr Zvini, Olo Hadri Zvini, can I renege on the sale or not? So we'll say, what the Gemara is really asking over here is like this. When the purchaser knows that the reason I'm selling the land is for a particular purpose, and that particular purpose does not materialize, is that almost like I could say, like, I made the sale on a t'nai with a condition? And because the condition, now again, in this case, the condition was that I need the money to buy the antique Honda from Reuven. Reuven is no longer selling the antique Honda. So the shaila now is that like a t'nai? Can I renege on the sale or not? So the Gemara says, Tashma, the Hugabra dizavin ara l'Rav Papa, there was a particular man who sold land to Rav Papa, because he needed money. He needed money to buy oxen. And what happens in the end? It turned out that he did not need the oxen. And what's that? And obviously, what happened? Rav Papa returned the land. So what do you see from here? It appears from this mindset, from this story, that if you know that the seller is selling the land to obtain funds to be able to purchase a particular item, and then that purchase becomes impossible, that lemaisa again the sale is voided. To which the Gemara says, no, Rav Papa lifnim mishuras hadin hu da'avid. No, the Bible says Rav Papa wasn't going according to the letter of the law. Rather, Rav Papa was going above and beyond the law. Me'ikar hadin, Rav Papa did not have to return the land. But Rav Papa was being a good guy. He realized, he understood that the guy was doing this only in order to buy the oxen. He wasn't obligated. He wasn't halachically obligated to return the land, but he went above and beyond and did so. Toshma, tahu bitzurta dava benarda. There was a famine in Narda. Zabninhu kuli ama lapdinaihu lapadnaihu. And what happens? Everybody sold off their mansions. People say, why did they sell off their mansions? Because they needed food. They needed wheat. What happened? Lusof asuchiti. But then there was food. So I say everybody essentially was selling off their homes in order to have cash. Because remember, assuming that there was a famine, the price of wheat skyrocketed. So what happened? People sold off their real property in order to buy wheat. Then what happened? Then there was a shipment of wheat in Arda. So Rav Nachman, apparently what happened was everybody sold off their mansions, and before they needed to go ahead and before they used the money to buy the wheat, what happened? A new shipment of wheat came in. The price of wheat dramatically dropped. So Rav Nachman said the halacha is the sales of the mansions are voided. Are voided, which Rabosa indicates to us what? That if you know that the seller is selling for a particular purpose, and Lemaisa, again, that purpose does not materialize, then Lemaisa, the sale is void. To which the Gemara says, no, that's not a good case. Hasam nami zibini b'taos havu. In fact, that was a mekachtos. I was in a mekachtos. Rabosa, listen to this. The igali milsa, the arba be'ikuli hava kaima. Because it turned out that the boat, the ship with the wheat on it, was already docked in Narda at the time of the sale. Rabosai, they thought there was no wheat in Narda. But in reality, what? There was wheat in Narda. Rabosai, that's an easier case. That's a mekachtos. Because then that is a sale that's done with mistaken information. Because it's mistaken, that everybody will agree that a mekachtos is voided. So the Gemara says, Ihachi, hainu do amrali rami bar shmuel rav nachman, imkein, nimtseis machshin la asalava. But yet, what do you do with the fact? Rami bar shmuel said to rav nachman, how can you tell people this is in the Narda case? Remember, Rav Nachman is the one who said that the purchasers of the mansions have to return the mansions back to their owners. So Rabbi Bar Shmuel said, how can you do that? You're creating a stumbling block going forward. Rabbi said, what's the stumbling block? Stumbling block is no one's going to want to buy real estate anymore. Rabbi said, you're handicapping the real estate market. Can you imagine this? If it turns out that every single time someone's selling real estate, so the buyer has to begin to think about, you know, now he's doing it, he's selling the real estate because he needs the money to do X. Which means then what? If X doesn't materialize and he's gonna void the sale, you're gonna make real estate transactions impossible. So Rav Nachman said, come on, that's ridiculous. This is a famine we're talking about. Do famines happen every single day? He said, actually, yes. In fact, he said, in Narda, there were food shortages very often. And therefore, again, if you're going to go ahead and play these kind of games where people sell property for food shortages, no one will ever be able to sell real estate in Narda. What is the bottom line? The Hilchasa? Zobin. This is quite remarkable. Therefore, the halacha is that if somebody is selling property and the buyer knows that the seller is selling the property in order to obtain funds to purchase another item, and for some reason, again, the seller's ability to purchase that item does not materialize, the halacha is the seller has the ability to void the sale. Now that is a very open-ended statement. Take a quick look at Tosis. We're not gonna get into this halakha straight, but again, because we actually will see this later on. But look at Tosis quickly. Tosis gives a very important qualification. You see Tosis Vizavin Ulostrich Zuzi Hadri Zvini, Ukigon, Shegila Daito Bishas Hamecher, the Amar de Lisbin Turi Kazovinlu. Abosai, so Tosis says, first of all, this is when the seller explicitly says, I'm selling you this property in order to obtain funds to do X. He goes on, obviously, if the seller never says anything, then of course it goes without saying that what? That lemaisa, again, he can't claim because dvarim shebalev ain't dvarim. If you're thinking something, it makes no difference. I just want to read to you this last piece. The chayim perek bebeis kiddush. Listen to this. We'll say, when we get to kiddush, that's a great case. We'll say, say, remember, the Gemara Masechta Kedushin brings down, and this is an amazing case, and this, by the way, this I was approached about a case like this. Somebody was selling their house to make aliyah, and then what happened? They sold the house, and then their plans fell through. So they wanted to renege on the seller. Now, the truth is, in contract law, so these kinds of things, unless you write it into a contract, it doesn't make a difference. But in halacha, it's quite interesting. In halacha, the seller would actually have grounds to void the sale. Because then it was clear, I love my house. And the only reason I love my house is why, the only reason I'm selling my house is because I love Eretz Yisrael more. But if it turns out that my plans don't go to Aristotle, there are many caveats with that. The caveats also is that it has to be that my plans fell through not because of my own negligence, right? If I just didn't, whatever. But if circumstances came up, some familial circumstance came up, on halachic level, someone would have the ability to void such a sale like that. Okay, Evet Mishnah. I'm sorry?
Time limit, 5 days, 1 month?
Is there a time limit?
A time limit. There must be some kind of time limit on that, right? Like, for example, if a person made aliyah and then it didn't work out in Eretz Yisrael and they came back, so the pashtas, right, then they wouldn't have the ability to void the sale. There must be some. I don't know. I have to look at the halacha again, but there must be some kind of time limit. But I will say, it's just interesting to note that the halacha does accept that when the seller explicitly says that I'm selling this for this particular reason, that does factor in the transaction, and under certain circumstances, should those reasons not materialize, sale would be void.
Is there ever another case where you can claim back up post for the seller?
This is not Mekach Tos.
No, but we said earlier, the claim was that it's considered Mekach Tos.
Right.
Correct.
Normally Mekach Tos is that the buyer discovers something that he didn't know beforehand. But you're right. Except this is what Mekach Tos is saying. I sold based on certain knowledge. Now I realize that knowledge was erroneous, therefore it's a Mekach Tos. Correct. Normally Mekach Tos is on the purchaser side, not the seller side. I don't know if this is the only case like that.
Happens if improvements were made to the property?
So you have the ability to collect that. You have the ability, absolutely. Then the purchaser has the ability to, I'll give you back your property, but you owe me for the improvements. Says the Mishnah, so the Mishnah says, continuing on what we said before, remember we've established in the previous Gemara, that how an almana sells off the property, meaning how much property could she sell off at a time. Now what the Mishnah says, an almana, whether she's an almana from Irisin or from Nisuin, has the ability to sell off the property to collect mizonos. She doesn't have to do it in front of Beis Din. Now, boss, remember again, I want to be clear. Let me take that back. If a woman is widowed from Irisin, there's no mizonos in Irisin, but she does get a ksuva. In the suin, of course, there's the payments for both mizonos as well as for ksuva. So what the Tanakama is saying is a woman always has the ability to sell off estate property, not in the presence of Beis Din, and that is true whether she's selling it off for mizonos or whether she is selling it off for ksuva. Rabbi Shimon says, "Min anisun mocharesh lo beis din." So Rabbi Shimon says, if she's widowed from nisuin, then meaning so she therefore she's selling it off for mazonos purposes, then the halach is mocharesh lo beis din. She has the ability to sell off in front of beis din. However, min ha'irusin lo timkor elo beis din. However, again, if she's widowed from irusin, and therefore Abbas, we're talking about over here for ksuva, then the halacha is she may not sell outside of Bezin. Mitnei she'in lamazonos, v'chol she'in lamazonos l'simkar ela b'bezin. And whoever doesn't have mazonos and therefore is selling off property only for ksuva must sell off that property in the presence of a Beis Din. Bishlam aminan isuin mishom mizoni. I understand the wife woman is widowed from nisuin. She's allowed to sell off property not in front of Beis Din. Let's think about this for just a moment. You know, if you go ahead, if a woman needs to sell off property for mizonos, you can't make her wait for Beis Din. Why can't you make her wait for Beis Din? Because they're both like, because first of all, remember, you can't just call a Beis Din and say, hey, you know, what time could I come in? You know, meaning you have to make an appointment, and it takes time. It takes time. So therefore, the Maisa, again, for mizonos, you can't make her wait. So mizonos, I understand she can sell off property immediately without having to wait for Beis Din. Ella, Amud Beis. Ella, mina iris in my time. But I both say, again, if she's selling off property, she was widowed during Erusin, that means she's selling off property for the sake of collecting her ksuba. So if she's selling off property for the sake of collecting her ksuba, why is she allowed to go ahead and do that, even not in the presence of Beis Din. So we have Machlokes. Amar Ula. Ula says Mishum Chino. Rabbi says, this is interesting, because of favor. Now look at Rashi. Mishum Chino. She Yehu Ba'alein Lechein Be'enehen. Follow Yemanu Hanashim Milisa Anashim. Rabbi says, we want women to have a favorable conception of marriage. So therefore, how do we make them have a favorable conception of marriage? The idea is we want it to be as user-friendly of a process as possible. Rabbi says, of course, this is talking about there's no longer marriage. The idea, from Chazal's perspective, at least in Talmudic times, the scariest part, if a woman were to be widowed, would be the fact that how is she going to be taken care of? Who's going to take care of her? And therefore, if she feels that she has to go to Beis Din before going ahead and getting her ksuva, that's very scary for her. Therefore, Chazal, in order to kind of calm her down and make her feel favorable about the institution of marriage and give women a sense of security about getting married, so Chazal said, don't worry, even if you're widowed, you don't have to wait for Beis Din to get your ksuva. You could take property, you could sell it off, and you can know that you're supported. That's Ula. Rabbi Yochanan says, Lefishen, other Moses is Bazi Isha Beis Din. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, it's very simple. You know why she could sell off property without going to Beis Din? Because a man does not want his wife to be degraded in front of Beis Din. Now, we'll say, now, what does it mean to be degraded in front of Beis Din? It's embarrassing for women. First of all, again, in line with Talmudic norms of tznius, it would have been unsuitable for women to have to go to Beis Din. And for a woman to have to argue her case, have to present this case in front of Beis Din, would have been something degrading for her. A man doesn't want that for his wife. So it's almost like a man yields certain rights that although, even though normally we'd say before you sell places of the estate you should get legal permission, based in permission, but a man doesn't want his wife having to be degraded like that, therefore she could bless you, therefore she could sell it off even not in front of Beis Din. So the Gemara says, so again, remember, Ula and Rabbi Yochanan are agreeing that, at least in the Tanakhama, that a woman could sell off property for the sake of her ksuba without going to Beis Din first. Their machlokes is why. So Ula says, Chino, we want marriage to look favorable for her. Rabbi Yochanan says, because a man doesn't want his wife to be degraded in front of Beis Din. So Mar says, Ma'benai, what's the practical difference between these two opinions? Ikabinayu, Grusha. Oh, what's I tell you the practical difference would be in a case of Grusha, a woman who's divorced. Lemander Mishum Chino. The one who, according to Ula, who says that the whole reason that we want her, we allow her to sell off property for a ksuva, even not in front of Beis Din, is because of chen, because you want marriage to look favorable for women. So that will even apply if a woman is divorced. Because Rabbi says it's not about this particular woman, it's about allowing the institution of marriage to look like a user-friendly system. And that applies even if he divorces his wife. However, Lamanda Omar. But according to Mandam, who says that normally a man allows his wife to collect without Beis Din, is in order that she not be degraded in front of Beis Din. If he divorced her, I don't care what happens to her, right? Meaning, let her be degraded. I'm not looking out for her covet right now. It doesn't matter to me whether she's going to be. In fact, maybe I'd rather to be. You know, maybe I want her to be uncomfortable. In any event, so the Gemara said that's
it. Right?
Correct. So the Gemara says, Tanan, so yet we learned, Ugrusha lo simkar ala Beis Din. Be'abas, we have a Mishnah that says that a Grusha may not sell off property of the estate to collect her ksuva unless a Grusha does so in front of Beis Din. Bishlam ala mandam lafi shein adam rosh this baza ishta Beis Din, Grusha lo ichpas lay. So we'll say, I understand, according to the mandam who says, that normally, again, will allow women to go ahead. We normally allow women to sell off property because you don't want it to be degraded in front of Beis Din. That doesn't apply by a Grusha. And that's why the Mishnah says that if she's going to sell off property, she has to do so in front of Beis Din. El Lamandar Mishum Chino. But according to Mandar Mu says that, again, remember, we want Chen, we want the institution of marriage and even the dissolution of marriage to be seamless. Grusha nami bayachin. So to a grusha should also be able to sell off property, not in front of Beis Din. Ha money, whose opinion does this reflect? Rabbi Shimon he. Our Rabbi said, this is Rabbi Shimon. Because remember, what did Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah say? Rabbi Shimon was the one who said that whenever a woman is selling off marital property, right to go ahead and satisfy ksuba, she always has to do it in front of Beis Din. E Rabbi Shimon, but if it's Rabbi Shimon, Hatana Lareisha, we already learned this in the earlier part of the Mishnah, Mina Erisin Lo Simkar. We'll say the Reisha that he's referring to is our Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon already said that if a woman is either widowed or divorced from Erisin, that which means she's collecting her ksuba, she has to do so in front of Beis Din. So we've already learned Rabbi Shimon's Shita. What would I have thought? Amona Mina Erisin Hudulo Nafish Chen Dida. Aval Grusha Din Nafish Chen Dida Ema Tiboy Chen. See, I would have thought the following. When do we say that a woman has to sell off, if she's going to sell off property, she has to do it in front of Beis Din? That's when a woman ultimately, again, is widowed from Erusin. Because also, when she's widowed from Erusin, there's not an intimate connection between husband and wife. So I'd say maybe in that case, we're not as worried for the chain piece. But a woman who was divorced, let's say from Nisuin, where there was an intimate relationship already between husband and wife, I might have thought still in that case, the preservation of chain is important because there was an intimate relationship to which the Gemara says, therefore Bishim has to teach you that that's not the case, that even if she's a grusha from Nisuin, nevertheless, in order for her to go out and collect her ksuva, she still requires going to Beis Din. But we already learned this. Kol she'inla mazonos. Remember, Rabbi Shimon Abbas was explicit in saying what? Any case where there is no mazonos, if she wants to collect her ksuva, lemaisa, again, she has to go to Beis Din. Rabbi Abbas, what does that come to include? My love, la asuye grusha. Does that not come to include the case of grusha? Meaning, because you must remember, a grusha doesn't get mizonos. A grusha just gets an entitlement to her ksuva. Lo, la'asuye migureshes ve'ina migureshes k'drabizera. You already know what it comes to include. It comes to include the case, Rabosai, of migureshes ve'ina migureshes. Rabosai, this is a case of safek gerushin. So the paradigmatic case, right, of safek gerushin is what? A man throws a get to his wife. We'll get to this in Gittin. But l'maisa, again, the halacha is that if the get is karov law, if the get is within her dalet amos, so she is divorced. So the paradigmatic case of safek gerushin means is a man throws a get to his wife, and it's safek karov law, safek karov law. We're not sure, is it closer to him, is it closer to her? That's safek migureshes. Kedra bizera, dam rabbi zera, komakom sha'amru migureshes, ve'inu migureshes, ba'al chayiv b'mizono se'ha. Oh, Rabbi Zera, listen to this. So in a case of safek gerushin, we paskin like rabbi zera, namely, that the husband is still required to give her mizonos. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon is saying in that kind of case, where husband is still obligated to give her mizonos, in that type of situation, she would still be required to sell off property in the presence of Beis Din in order to supply her with that mizonos. Tashma, kishem shemochere shaloba Beis Din, kach yorsheha yorshe ksuvasa mochren shaloba Beis Din. Listen to this. So now we say the same way that she is permitted to sell off property for mizonos purposes, right? Shloba Beis Din. In the same way that she's permitted to sell off property, not in Beis Din. Actually, I take this back. This doesn't have to be mizonos. This could be any situation. The same way that she is permitted to sell off property, Shloba Beis Din, kach yorsheha yorshek suvasa bochur Shloba Beis Din. So too, I will say what? So too, those who go ahead and inherit her ksuva also have the ability to go ahead and sell off not in front of Beis Din, to which the Gemara says, "Bishlam leman damar lefishin adam rotsa shetisbazi isha beis din ki echi diihi lo nechale ditisbazi yersha nami lo nechalu delivzu." So it's according to the man damar, i.e. Rabbi Yochanan, who says that the reason a man allows his wife to collect property or to sell property outside of Beis Din is in order that she not be demeaned or degraded. So that concern applies not only to his wife, but it also applies to anyone who inherits the ksuva in her stead. But according to the man d'amar, who says that we allow her to collect outside of Beis Din because of chayin, in order to make marriage look more appealing, then again, why should that apply? Why should this logic apply by her inheritors? To which the Gemara answers, Tirgama ula kigon shiyar shasa bita o achosa. What's the case of Osai? The case of where her inheritor is a woman as well. Her inheritor is a daughter, or her inheritor is a sister, in which case we still have a vested interest in making the institution of marriage, or in even that matter, the dissolution of marriage, looking as nice, pleasant, and as seamless as possible, and therefore we will allow them to go ahead and collect for the ksuva even outside of Beis Din. Well, you should just know that the Rambam paskins in accordance with the Tanna Kamma in this Mishnah, and therefore the halacha is that if a woman is widowed either from Erusin or from Nisuin, the halacha is that she is permitted to go ahead and sell off estate property, both for her mizonos as well as for her ksuva, shalo be-Beis Din. She's permitted to go ahead and sell that off, even not in the presence of Beis Din. So again, remember, this dovetails what we learned before. And remember again, that ability to sell off property, obviously, she could do whatever she wants to provide for her sustenance for her ksuva, but obviously, if she burns through all of that property for the sake of her mizonos and leaves nothing for the ksuva, then she's out of luck. She may not go after the yarshim for any additional payment. Says the Mishnah: Machra ksuvasa omiktsasa, mashkina ksuvasa omiktsasa, nasna ksuvasa laachra omiktsasa. So we'll say, so listen to this: if she went ahead and she sold off her ksuva. She sold her ksuva to another party. Or for that matter, she went ahead, or miktsasa, or she sold off part of the interest of her ksuva. Or for that matter, mashkina ksuvasa or miktsasa, or she collateralized. She gave her ksuva as collateral, or she gave part of her ksuva as collateral. Or nasna ksuvasa la'acher or miktsasa, or she went and she gave away part of her ksuva to another person, or she gave away her ksuva or part of her ksuva. Lo simkar es ashar ela bebezdin. She can only collect the rest of it in bezdin. She could only go ahead and, now she wants to collect the rest of her ksuva. She could only sell off properties to collect the rest of her ksuva in basin itself. And I was about to say, what the Tanakhama is saying over here is even if we accept beforehand that she could do certain things, not in front of basin, that's only if what? That's only if her ksuva is intact. If her ksuva is no longer intact, then lemaisa, again, she cannot do anything. When I say intact, I mean fully intact. Meaning she hasn't either given away part of it, sold part of it, collateralized part of it. But once she's done something that takes away from the wholeness of the ksuva, if she wants to collect the rest of what she's entitled to, that must be done in front of Beis Din. The Chum say no. Mocheres yafilu arba v'chamisha pamim. She can even sell the ksuva 4 or 5 times. Again, we'll discuss exactly what that means. We'll discuss what that means. And she could go out and sell off for mizonos, even out of the presence of Beis Din. But I will say, now the Mishnah says something very interesting. If she sells off property for the sake of mizonos, in the shtar, in the bill of sale, she should indicate that she sold this off for the purpose of mizonos. Ugrusha lo simkar ala Beis Din. But a grusha, Rabosai, who already we established before, does not get mizonos. A grusha must go ahead and sell off the property only in the presence of Beis Din. I'll just point out to you, the Rashi points out, the first Rashi in the Mishnah here, Rashi lo simkar es hashar, Rabbi Shimon ka'amar lo, damar emo cheresh lo Beis Din el mizonos. Vezu mechivan shegavsa miktsasa ein la mizonos. So Rabosai, Rashi is giving his coming attractions. This first part of this Mishnah that says that she can only sell off properties in the present, once she sold off or given away or collateralized part of her ksuva, she can only collect the rest in the presence of Beis Din. That's Rabbi Shimon. Because according to Rabbi Shimon, is of the opinion that once in some way she takes away from the wholeness of the ksuva, then Lamais Rabbi Shimon holds she's no longer entitled to mizonos. Once she's no longer entitled to mizonos, she's only collecting ikar ksuva, and Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that ikar ksuva could only be collected in Beis Din itself. But let's just do a few lines, we're going to have to stop. Says the Gemara, Mas Nisin money. Whose opinion does our Mishnah reflect? Rabbi Shimon, I just gave you coming attractions. Rabbi Shimon, Disanya, Machra ksuva, so if a woman sold her ksuva, Mashkina ksuva, so or she collateralized her ksuva, Asasa ksuva sapotiki, La'acher, Rabbi, or she made her ksuva napotiki. Apotiki means she borrowed money. Potiki is essentially the same thing as collateral. But as opposed to collateral, which is only seized in the event that the creditor can't repay actual cash, apotiki means apotehe koi, where literally I'm saying to the creditor, this is where you're going to collect from. In any of these cases, ein la mizonos. Right? She doesn't have mizonos. Rabbi Shimon says, afa pi shalom machra v'lo mashkina ksuvasa ela machatzisa. But Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that even if what? Even if she didn't sell the whole ksuva, or she didn't go ahead and collateralize the entire ksuva, rather only sold part of it. What's that? Lacha? Avda mizonosa. She's lost her mizonos. Why, Rabbi say the memra? Did Rabbi Shimon suffer? Delo amrinan miktsas kesef kekol kesef. For Rabbanan suffer miktsas kesef kekol kesef. Rabbi say because what? Because the ma'aseh appears that Rabbi Shimon says that just because some of the money of the ksuva is intact does not allow us to say that the entire ksuva is intact. Whereas Rabbanan hold that as long as some of the money of the ksuva is intact, therefore all of the money is intact. So Rabbi say now we're beginning to understand that according to Rabbi Shimon, apparently, once she's done away with some amount of the ksuva, either given it away, sold it away, collateralized it, therefore Rabbi Shimon says she gives up mizonos, because Rabbi Shimon says once you give away part of the ksuva, it's as if the ksuva, obviously she still owed the rest of it, but it compromises the ksuva in its entirety. Whereas Rabbanan seem to say, no, as long as part of the ksuva remains intact, the ksuva itself is considered to be intact as well. So we'll say, but yet, actually, you know what, we're going to stop here for today. We're going to stop here for today. We're going to pick up with Emir Tzashem. So remember again, I'm leaving you with a cliffhanger. I hope that you could function today, just knowing that. But I promise you, rest assured, we will have resolution in Miras Hashem by 6:45 tomorrow morning. Again, I both say, just know we're leaving off with this cliffhanger. And the cliffhanger is, again, then this is a very important case, because you could easily have a woman who leveraged her ksuva against other debts. According to Rabbi Shimon, once she's done that, she's still entitled to the rest of the ksuva. But lamaisa, she's lost mizonos. According to the Rabbanon, as long as part of the ksuva is intact, the mizonos entitlement is intact as well. The Gemara wants to frame this as a fundamental dispute of miksas kasef kikol kasef. Do we say as long as part of the ksuva is intact, we treat it as if the whole ksuva is intact? Or do we say no? In order for the whole ksuva to be intact, what has to happen? The whole ksuva has to be intact, right? But once part of it is not intact, then by definition, certain ksuva entitlements are compromised. And Meretz Hashem will continue tomorrow.